am I using left? All right. I'm going to put this right here. It's good to be back at my home church. It's been a while, and I'm always happy to be here, even though every Sabbath morning these college students test my faith by robbing our parking spots. All right. Well, I was thinking about what to share with us this morning, and Psalm 42 has become one of my favorite psalms because I feel as though it reflects all of our experience. If you study the book of Psalms carefully, specifically this specific psalm, Psalm 42, you notice that it talks about the present, it talks about the past, it talks about the future. And it talks about our desires, it talks about God, it talks about a good relationship with God, it talks about a bad relationship with God. It talks about hope for the future, and it also talks about a current struggle. And so it really encompasses, in just 11 verses, it encompasses a whole lot of the human experience. And so I thought that this would be a good message for us to study, a good psalm for us to study this morning. I've entitled our message this morning, As the Deer. You probably can't see there very clearly the picture that is behind me, but this is what I was doing last Sunday. This is a picture of Beginning Point there at Berrien Springs, all the way to your left. And all the way to your right is a picture of the city of Chicago. Andrews University Health Sciences Department, I think it was, sponsored a 101-mile race from Andrews University all the way to Chicago. And when they invited people to do this, only two people raised their hands. One of them was a PhD student, I think, who was studying something in the sciences, so he's got to do it, you know, out of obligation. And another one was a theology professor in the seminary, which goes to show, just because you have education doesn't necessarily mean that it's all okay up there, if you know what I'm talking about. So they're running 101 miles from Berrien Springs to Chicago. And in the middle of the week, I get a phone call from a friend of mine who is a dentist out in Washington State. And he says to me, Israel, I'm wondering if you would be willing to come with me because I'm going to fly all the way from Washington State to Michigan so that I can make this a threesome. And I said, okay, Calvin, I'll go along with you to be your part of your support team and so forth. He had just, I think a week or two before that, he'd run what he called the rim to rim to rim. So started at the Grand Canyon, one side of the rim, they ran all the way down, back up, and then they did it again. And call it courage or call it something else, but these people did that. And so he just finished that. I think that was a total of 50-something mile run in the heat of the Arizona desert and in the Grand Canyon. And so he thought to himself, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I agreed with him because you're going to do it and then die. He wanted to do this thing. And so he called me up. And he asked if I would be willing to recommend someone that would help him, help crew for him, run next to him part of the way and so forth. And so I called some college kids to see if they would be crazy enough to come along and to be bribed for a meal. And some of them agreed to come. One of them was our very own, he's not a college kid, but Mike Reynolds. And so he came along with me. We developed our plan. And so these guys were going to be running 100 miles at about a 10:30 pace. And they started at about 7:10 Saturday night, and they ran through the evening, and the idea was to finish right in the middle of Chicago the next day on Sunday, sometime in the afternoon. And so when Calvin came, he didn't trust me, so he brought two other people from Washington just in case. And so we're following him, and we developed a plan. And Calvin said, look, I think I'm going to be able to keep up with these guys through the night. I just need someone for the last half of the race, when things get difficult, just to run beside me. And so we developed a plan. The plan was that we would get one of the kids who's done an Ironman distance, 140 miles of swimming, biking, and running. And the idea was that this guy would run with Calvin the first part of the race until he got tired, and then he would rest in the car, and then he'd get on the bike and follow him on the bike the rest of the way. And I was like, hey, Greg, do you think you can do this? Yes, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty confident I can do this. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Okay, great. So this was the plan. And then I had Mike Reynolds for another 10 miles. So the idea was Greg would run until he died. Then he'd get in the car and we'd revive him. And then while we're reviving him, Mike Reynolds runs for 10 miles. And then we throw the revived Greg back on the bike. So we're going into this race and Greg, everyone's excited. We put Greg on him. And as we're going through the night, we realize Greg was just doing this without training. He's just his first, you know, he hadn't done it for a while. He's going out there. The guy's a very, very fit kid. He's going and he's overhydrating himself. So he's throws up everything that he's got, but he keeps running. And he goes for the first marathon, gets in the car, falls asleep. And Calvin continues on. And these guys are running a little too fast. We're stopping every 20 miles or so to check how these guys are doing. And they grab a bite to eat. Some of them get massaged on their legs. And then they keep going. And this is kind of what's taking place. This is the beginning of the race. Calvin's the guy in the middle. The guy on my right-hand side is Oliver. He's the professor. The other guy is Oleg. He's the PhD student. And as they're going on, this is now Sunday. So they go, it gets to the point where the two individuals, I call them the Europeans from Andrews, they take off because, they train for the race. They're running a little too fast. Calvin's thinking to himself, I need to stop. I need to slow down my pace, otherwise I'm not going to make it. This is now the last part of the 100-mile run. It looks like they're hugging each other because they love each other, and they do. They learn to love each other a lot more after this race, but literally, these guys are holding up Calvin because what happened was Calvin, was his pace was too fast. 10 minute miles was too fast for him to go 100 miles. And trying to keep up with them, I think it kind of exhausted him and it depleted his energy. So now he's getting progressively worse. He's going from running to walking, from walking to walking slowly, from walking slowly to human crutches. So these guys are human crutches. Greg is the guy with on your left. He's the guy at Andrews, and then Elizabeth is on his right, and our right as well. And I told Judy when I left, I said, "Look, Jude, I'll be back by 3. Max, I'll be back by 5 latest." And then around that time, I called Judy. She's like, "Have you left yet?" "No, I think I'm gonna be back by 8." And then later on, he's not done yet. I think we're going to be back by 10 or 11. And I was so exhausted. I was up for about 41 hours with a couple of naps here and there driving. And I was exhausted. And I was thinking to myself, if this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, I wonder what it must be like for him who's been running this whole time. And as he was doing this, as he was running along, I learned this very valuable lesson of Psalm 41. This is now, he's finished the race. I only did the last mile with him. This guy burned himself out. He burned out everyone in his crew. Mike was supposed to run 10 miles. The guy ended up doing 32 miles. This other guy, Greg, was supposed to only run a marathon. He ended up running 2 marathons. And so everyone is exhausted, and it's down to me, the driver. And so we're at mile 99, and this guy just needs one more mile to go. And I'm his human crutch, and I'm starting to get cramps on my back just being his support, you know, but I can't complain. This is the end. He gets to the hotel. They don't have a wheelchair, so he's in those luggage carrier things. And he's completely exhausted checking into the hotel. The next day, he's in a wheelchair at the airport, and the guy is stalking them or photobombing, and probably someone famous that we don't know, but he's wearing the cool sunglasses. So that's it. I learned a valuable lesson here that relates to Psalm 42. As we were going through this race with Calvin, there's one thing that Calvin, one thought that was never expressed. I don't know if it ever crossed his mind, but It was definitely a thought that was never expressed, which really, really shocked me. And that was the thought of quitting. You know, you're going for 100 miles. After mile 80, he can't really walk on his own. He needs to be supported. I'm asking him how he's doing. He says, the good news is my feet are numb. I can't feel anything anymore. And so it's good. Last 10 miles, how are you doing? I'm in too much pain. Now I can feel my feet again, but they're super painful. But I have 10 miles to go, so I can't stop. And this thought never crosses his mind. But I realize this, that when you are that far into the race and you're utterly, completely exhausted, it's crucial how you take care of yourself in order to survive the race. One mistake with your nutrition, or one mistake because your mind is going crazy, one wrong decision that you make can literally either cause you to be unable to finish the race, or in some cases, even cause you to die. And there is this struggle between an intense desire to finish the race and this other intense desire to listen to your body's call to quit. It is this battle that takes place with the mind and the body. And this is actually what is taking place in Psalm 42. It is a struggle between two things. It is a struggle between two realities. It is a struggle between the spiritual reality and the physical reality. And so the Bible says, the very first part, the very first verse of this passage, as the deer pants for the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee. It's interesting to me that out of all the creatures in the Bible, there's, I looked it up this morning on Wikipedia, I thought they'd give me a number, you know, like, hey, the Bible uses 1,000 creatures, but it lists them in alphabetical order because I think there's too many of them. But it dawned on me that out of all the animals in the Bible, David chooses the deer to identify who he is, to identify his desire for God, and to identify his relationship with God. And I wonder, why is it that David chooses the deer? The deer is not a predator. The deer is a prey. And here David uses this animal, this seemingly weak animal in Scripture, to identify who he is. Bambi was one of the iconic Walt Disney movies, and it is credited to actually impact, at least for a moment in time, the entire hunting industry. When Bambi came out and Bambi's mom or dad, I forgot which one, maybe both, were killed, I think it was the mom that was killed, little girls started telling their dads that they did not want them to go out and kill Bambi's mom. And so for a while, either the dads had to hide it or they stopped hunting altogether. As a matter of fact, they said that this story of Bambi fueled the vegetarian movement. They now have what is called the Bambi effect. Chefs call it the Bambi effect. When you go and you order a fish or something, they don't want you to have the face of the fish because they don't want the fish looking at you when you don't want the fish looking at you when you're eating it. And so they call this the Bambi. Now there's this thing called the Bambi effect. When we think of deer, we oftentimes in our mind have this picture, a beautiful picture of a deer that has a very nice personality that is drinking water by the water brooks. But this is not what the psalm is talking about when it's talking about the deer panting after the water brook. There's a few things I want to look at this morning. The Bible says that the deer has this desire, this panting after the water brook, panting after God. And first of all, I want to look at three things. The first thing that I want to look at is the cause. The cause is. Second thing I want to look at is the object. And the third thing that I want to look at this morning is the intensity of the desire. First of all, the cause. There is an inward cause and there is an outward cause. When the Bible talks about this deer panting after the water brook, it uses this animal, it uses this creature that is a deer with a desire for the water brooks. The deer has this desire for two reasons, two causes. First of all, there is an inward cause. There is an inward cause that makes this deer long for the water brooks. Notice that the Bible doesn't talk about here a camel, but it instead talks about a deer. A deer has this understanding of itself, and that is that it cannot provide for its own thirst. Even though the deer is thirsty, it recognizes that it does not have in itself the capability to provide for its own thirst like a camel would. A camel could go a very, very long distance, and it is created, it is designed, and it is capable within itself to store water for the long journey ahead. But the deer does not have this capability. The deer is not equipped with these types of extras, if you will. And so the deer has an understanding. It has an inward understanding. There is an inward cause. It has an idea of who it is, that in and of itself, it cannot provide for its longing for water. It cannot provide for its thirst. And so David says, in the same way that the deer has an understanding of who it is, I have an understanding of who I am. I have a thirst for something that is beyond me. And just like that deer, I have an inward thirst. I have an inward cause. The soul does not have what it needs in order to satisfy its strong desire for spiritual things or for water. But there is also an outward cause. There is an outward cause that has placed the deer in this situation. If you were to read the psalm, you would have picked up there the things that David is facing. Enemies are calling out to David, "Where is your God?" David says that he is going through such an experience where his tears have become his bread and his water, his meat and his food. David is going through trials in his life that are questioning either the existence of God or the power of God in his life. They're either questioning whether or not God is real or whether or not God is able to intersect with the human experience. There is something outwardly that is causing David, or that is causing the deer, to have this thirst. And in the case of the deer, it is the fact that the deer is being hunted. The deer is thirsting for the water brooks because it does not have in and of itself the capability to satisfy its thirst, but also because of the outward circumstances which it finds itself in. And that is the fact that it is being hunted, that it is being chased, that people are going after it to kill it. They're seeking its life. And so David is saying, in his experience, just like a hunted deer, he also is hunted. He is hunted by the enemies of God. He is hunted not with bows and arrows, but he is hunted with questions of the existence of God or God's power in his life. People are asking him, "David, where is your God?" If you are not in an experience where you have been hunted, there's one thing that I can promise you, and that is that you will experience this at least one time in your life. I'm pretty confident that many of us, if not all of us in this room, experience this. Not only have we experienced this, but we experience this often over and over and over in our lives. Not necessarily always through people, but through situations. When finances dry up, when health dries up, when relationships dry up, they are like bows. They are like arrows being struck at the very heart of the Christian experience. And they ask the question, where is your God? Where is his power? The deer goes through an inward experience. There is an inward cause that makes this deer seek for water, but there is also this outward cause. The fact that it is being chased, the fact that it is being hunted, and that this makes the deer thirst for water. There's also the past, the present, and the future. In this experience, in this outward experience of being hunted, something crosses the mind of the deer. Something causes this deer to remember the coolness of the springs of water that it is used to drinking from ever since it was a babe. And so the past causes the deer to yearn for the springs of water. And this is also the case in David's experience. Do you see there in verse 4? When I remember, he recalls the time that he was able to visit the house of God. He recalls the time when he was able to praise God. He recalls the time when he was able to worship God. Something in the past dips into the mind of David, making him recall these experiences that he's had in the past. And so he says, just like that deer remembers the cool springs of water, so I remember those times when I was able to freely worship in God's house, when I was freely able to praise God. I remember a time in my experience when God and I were connected and when our fellowship was sweet. But now, David's situation is much different. Now, the present situation, David is under attack. Now, in his present situation, David is not able to worship God as he has in the past. And this is also the experience that you and I go through. Maybe perhaps you recall a time when your relationship with God was at its peak, when we experienced worship with God and our walk with him was beautiful and nice and sweet. And sometimes we go through this thing called life, and things creep up on us, and the job gets really busy, and things just get busier and busier, tighter and tighter, and before we know it, coming to the house of God is no longer a sweet experience, but it becomes a painful experience, or it becomes a wearisome experience. David's past and David's present calls him to remember and to yearn for a current experience with God. But there is also hope. Hope that if he gets through the moment that he is currently going through, that things will once again get better. And that is why over and over again in the psalm, he keeps on repeating this phrase, "Hope thou in God." Hope is something that we look forward to in the future. Hope is a future experience, or an experience that we are longing for a better tomorrow. The deer understands that if it just gets to the water brook, that it will have what it takes in order to survive life. The deer knows that as it is running away from those who are hunting it, it knows that if it can just get to a source of water to quench its thirst, that it will be able to experience a more hopeful future. And so this is why, even though the deer is being hunted, there is a struggle that exists in its mind, a struggle to stop for water at the risk of death or to continue on at the risk of death. Hope thou in God is what David says. He's contemplating the past, contemplating his current experience, and contemplating the future. And this is the experience that he relates to the deer. We've looked at the causes, inward cause, outward cause, the past, the present, the future. I want to talk a little bit about the object. He says, as the deer panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after you, O God. David, if you read the psalm, is at a point in his experience where he is not on his throne, but he is instead running for his life. There are many things that David can yearn for. The very first and most obvious of all these things is his kingdom, the royal privileges. But when David stops to contemplate in the middle of dangerous and tumultuous times in his life, the very first thing that pops into the mind of David, the thing that David craves, the thing that David yearns for, is not the restoration of his kingdom. It's not his royal privileges, but it is instead his experience with God. And it caused me to stop and to think, Israel, what is it that you crave in life? As soon as things get difficult, what's the first thing that pops into your mind? When finances get tough, the very first thing that comes into my mind is the craving for money. when relationships get tough, the first thing that pops up into my mind is the craving for a better relationship. And I must admit that in many cases, my experience is not the experience of David. Where David yearns for and longs for his walk with God. David's affection is not royalty, but the object of his affection is God himself. And I wonder, why is it that we follow God anyway? I think that if we stop to contemplate our motivation to following God, that in many cases we will discover that our motivations are not always pure and holy. When I was engaged to Judy, we lived in the same apartment complex. And she was teaching at that time. And one evening, I went to her apartment, and we were talking together, and she fell asleep because she was tired from teaching. So she fell asleep. I did what every gentleman would do. I went back to my apartment. And when I went to my apartment, I did what every gentleman would do. I was hungry, so I said, I'm going to make myself some food. It was late by now. It was maybe pushing close to midnight. And I looked into my awesome refrigerator, and I looked at all the varieties of food that I was going to prepare. And after scanning my options, I pulled out the only thing that was left inside, and that was a bag of French fries. And French fries are the best food in the world, you know? And I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to go all out today. Instead of just baking those fries, I'm going to deep fry them like they do at McDonald's. And so I pull them out, and I put oil in a pan, and I turn that thing up on high to make the process go faster. And this is confession time. And so I was stealing internet from the guy upstairs. And so the only way I can get internet was to go into the room. So I went into my room while the oil was heating up, and I was stealing internet, illegal internet, from the guy upstairs. And then I went to check on my oil. I was going to dump the fries in there. And when I went there, I just saw this smoke just coming out. And as soon as I got into the kitchen, the fire just began to flame up. And I was thinking to myself, oh no. So I called Judy, and I was like, Judy, where's the fire extinguisher? Because we had the same apartment. And she woke up, and she's not very, when she wakes up, she's not completely there. That's one thing that hasn't changed. And she's not here, so I can talk about her. And so she said, you know, it's in the bathroom. And I knew it wasn't in the bathroom. So I was like, oh, forget it. My house is going to burn down before you help me. So I hung up on her, and I called 911. And I'm walking around the house with this flaming pan. I knew I wasn't supposed to put water on it. I should have just taken it outside, but I didn't. I call 911. The firemen came. My smoke is all over the apartment. And they came, and on their way, I found the fire extinguisher. And like a very, very brilliant, the brilliant person that I am, it's just a small flame by now, but I'm so angry at this flame that I get that fire extinguisher and I shoot it. And there's this big mess all over the apartment. I should have just let the whole thing burn down. I mean, that was a gigantic mess to clean up. And when Judy and I got married, we were going to move into that apartment. And as we stood face to face, I'm not going to lie to you, the thought that crossed my mind was, I wonder if she's marrying me because of everything that she's going to inherit. I mean, that awesome apartment with the nice flame decorations on the wall. My really, really awesome sports car that I owned at that time that was rusty and dying and about to break down. I wonder if she's going to marry me because she's going to inherit my car and my apartment. Or I wonder if she's going to marry me because she really loves me. And this was a struggle. This was a struggle that I had. In the same situation, I think many of us, we enter into a relationship with God, not so much because we love him, but because of what we can get, the goodie bag. But David says, I'm not craving royalty. I'm not craving the gifts that God gives me. The object of my affection is God. Let's talk a little bit about the intensity. He says, as a deer panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. This is a picture. If you were to type in, as a deer panteth after the water brook, and you look at the images on Google, this is one of the pictures you're going to get. A nice picture of a deer with nice, cool, calm streams of water drinking happily and contemplating the beauty of life. But this is not what the deer is experiencing. It's actually something more like that. When a deer is hunted and when the deer is running, you see, deer are meant to run short distances at a very, very fast pace, right? A deer cannot continue to run over and over and over and over again, miles and miles and miles. It's not designed to do that. It'll collapse. As a matter of fact, there is a group out in Kenya, a Kenyan tribe. Let me see. I think that's my last slide. The book is called Born to Run. And they're following this tribe in Kenya that they thought was a legend but is actually real, that hunts deer or antelope by literally running after them. And they'll jog after the antelope, and as long as the antelope doesn't make a sprint out for its life, as long as it continues to just trot along, they say that after a while, the antelope will begin to pant and it will lose power and it will collapse and die. Why? Because they're not meant to run long distances. They need water. They need water to survive. They can't just run and run and run. They'll die of exhaustion. And so here he's saying, as the deer panteth after the water brook, so pants my soul after thee. In other words, there is an intensity here that David is talking about when he's comparing his experience with the experience of the deer. As a deer is being hunted, as it's being chased, it comes to the point in its experience where it has to choose water at the risk of death or continuing on without water also at the risk of death. There is this tension that is taking place. This tension for its existence, this tension for its craving for water, and this tension for continuing on without this very important need. And so the deer will get to an experience. It'll get to a moment in time where it will begin to pant. Its tongue will stick out. It will begin to foam at the mouth. And if it does not get water immediately, it will collapse and it will die. And this is the experience that David is referring to when he's talking about his desire for God. He's saying, God, my desire for you is not just a casual desire, where if I get you for an hour or two in a week, it's awesome. And if I don't, I'll try better next time. No, he's saying, I long for you just like that deer that is being hunted longs for and craves for that spring of fresh water, where I know that if I don't get you right now, I will literally collapse and die. And so he is saying, my soul pants after you, O God. There is this video that I was watching about how to survive when your car goes into a body of water. And I'll admit that before, I actually had a plan of action in my mind of what I would do if my car went into water. And I always thought, I'm going to wait until the car sinks to the bottom, then I'm going to open the door like they do in the movies, and then I'm going to swim out. And until I watched this video, and they said, the worst thing you can do is wait for the car to sink to the bottom. You're going to drown. And they emphasize over and over and over again, when your car gets into the water, you're going to have a lot of different things flooding your mind. Call 911 or wait till the car sinks if you're dumb like Israel or whatever, right? And they said the very first thing that you need to do is open the windows. They said open the window. Don't call 911. Don't think of anything else except opening the windows. They say because if you don't open those windows, every other step doesn't matter. You can unbuckle your seatbelt, but if your window's closed and your car's underwater, you're going to die anyway. And so they said, the one thing that needs to be in your mind is first open the windows, then unbuckle your seatbelt, then get out, forget 911. Don't even call 911. It'll be too late. Upon this one action, every other action depends. Upon this one action, survival itself depends. And the deer gets to the point in its experience where it realizes that upon this one action, every other action depends. If it does not get water, it will not survive. If it does not get water, it will not have the strength to dodge the arrows of the hunter. Upon this one object, upon this one thing, the deer focuses. And it's the same for us. There's one thing that matters. Upon one thing, every other action is dependent. We can have whatever else we want in this world, but if we do not have that panting after the water brook, everything else is useless. So my challenge for us this morning is this. What does your soul long for? Do you have an intense desire for God? Because if we don't, then every other action, every other experience, every other thought, every other accomplishment is completely and altogether worthless.